In the reading, I noticed some synecdoche. And so if you were here this morning, I want to bring that to your attention again about whoever confesses the Son of God. Confession there stands for the whole of an individual's response to God. It doesn't mean that faith isn't required. Actually, it is faith that causes confession. It doesn't mean that repentance isn't required and a right response to God. Confession is just a part that stands for the whole. It explains the Christian's response to God. We confess. We declare to the world our allegiance and loyalty and submission and hope in Jesus Christ. What a marvelous text that was in 1 John. And I could just go off into another sermon right there, but I won't. And I look out over the audience tonight and, okay, not bad. I didn't scare off too many people this morning. That's always the test. Who's going to show Sunday night after hearing me preach two times on Sunday morning? Pretty good crowd tonight. Good to see you and see a few new faces tonight. Walking daily, humbly, with your King. That's what I'm here to attempt to enhance and help in your life. If I can get that accomplished and enhance that in the lives of everyone here, then it will have been a profitable week together. Amazing things, awesome things, God-glorifying things, things that advance His cause can happen when individuals such as yourselves walk daily and humbly with the King. And when all of these individuals walk daily and humbly with the King, the Lord can cause awesome things to the growth of His kingdom. He empowers it all. But we have to come to the table with the right heart and thus the right actions. And we're going to be talking about that this week. My life situation has changed dramatically over the last few years. And because Della and I are presently going back and forth between Tampa, Florida and Houston, Texas, it's really quite amazing that we've been doing this over the last 12 months in particular, going back and forth one time each month to Tampa. And so there's been a lot of traveling, even in the midst of the pandemic. I could tell you some interesting airport stories that have happened. Things are really strange these days. You can go through security in Houston with hundreds of people and nobody saying a word. And that's just really odd. There used to be such sound, and now there's not. Or you could sit on an airplane with 10 or 15 people, and that's all. Although the numbers are ratcheting up with Southwest, even though the middle seats are empty. And so we're going back and forth a lot. And one Sunday each month, we are worshiping with brethren in Tampa. We've been lately going to North Boulevard, where my friend Kenny Fields preaches. We were FC classmates. And we've been to Citrus Park, where Collie Caldwell is one of the elders and shares the pulpit with Mac Falls. I think Collie was supposed to hold a meeting here this spring, but that didn't happen. But I've worshiped with him the last couple of months. And we've also been down at Henderson, where Ralph Walker is the evangelist normally. And Ron Drum is one of the elders, and he was up one Sunday morning and talking about his recent trip to Honduras. And he had pictures, and so everybody was homed in on the pictures on the PowerPoint of Ron's trip to Honduras. And there was a big entourage of people that actually accompanied him on this trip, and he had a picture of the whole gang. And so he started on one side of the picture and went to the other side of the picture, talking about all the different people that were involved in this journey and work in Honduras. And he comes to the end of one person right in the middle of the picture that he had not yet talked about, and it was a young lady, a maybe preteen girl. And he says, she's not really a part of the group. She was in the hotel and just wanted to be a part of things and wanted to be a part of the picture. And so there she was right in the center of the picture, and she wasn't really even a part of the group that had traveled to do the work in Honduras. And that's just like children, isn't it? Something's going on here. Here's a big group of people. Hey, can I be a part of the picture? Sure you can. They invited her on in. And that really is a good beginning point for me this morning, or this evening, to take you to Mark chapter 10. Mark chapter 10, verse 13, and a story that happens during the ministry of Jesus. Mark chapter 10, we're going to begin reading in verse 13. And they were bringing children to him so that he might touch them. To bring children to a rabbi and for him to touch them would bring blessing to the child. And certainly Jesus is a phenom at this point. His fame is going far and wide. He is the great teacher who has come to the nation of Israel, and he's healing people to boot. And so even the children are rushing to him. Everybody is drawn to Jesus. And the disciples rebuked them. When Jesus saw this, you know, there's a lot going on around Jesus. There's people coming toward him and pressing toward him. And when he saw the disciples shooing the children away, moving them out of the picture, when Jesus saw this, he was indignant. Now, we talked this morning about getting to know Jesus, who he was, how he reacted, how he thought, not just the things that he said. And I want you to notice something that stirred him up in a negative way. This was something he didn't like seeing. He was indignant, Mark points out. And he says to them, "Permit the children to come to me. Do not hinder them. For the kingdom of God belongs to such as these. Truly, I say to you, whoever does not receive the kingdom of God like a child shall not enter it at all." You want to be in the kingdom? You want to please the king? Remember this morning we said Jesus is the king. And that's unavoidable. That's undeniable. You can't run away from that truth no matter how hard you try. You want to be a part of this kingdom? Then you better grasp what he's saying in verse 15, because he says, "Whoever does not receive the kingdom of God like a child shall not enter it at all." And he took them in his arms and began blessing them, laying his hands on them. So this passage struck me. One of the things that hits me in this story is that Jesus has time for everyone at every stage of life. It doesn't matter if you're 8 or 98. We have a sister in our congregation, Hattie Cole, I was telling Irma this at lunch today, who just turned 100. I'm going to tell you about a sister who is 94 now, who lives in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm going to tell you about her on Monday night. And it doesn't matter whether you're in your old age or you're a young person, Jesus has time for you. You matter to him. You are important to him because you are a creature fashioned by the handiwork of God. No one needs to be shooed away from the king. And certainly not children, because of what we can learn from a child. Point number two in this lesson is, since Jesus is saying don't shoo the children away, we need to bring our children to Jesus. I know we can't do that like they could, literally bring them to the presence of Jesus, but we need to introduce them to the reigning King, though He is at the right hand of the Majesty on high. It is the most important task given to parents. It is not to teach them how to play baseball, or basketball, or to be in a band, or to be in a play. The most important thing that we can do for our kids is to bring them to Jesus. Now, I did some of those other things. I wasn't in a play because I can't act. But I did play baseball. I mentioned that this morning. And basketball, well, if you grow up in Indiana, basketball is sort of a big deal. You have heard of the movie Hoosiers, right? Everybody plays basketball or tries to. And I did. If I wasn't so scrawny, you think I'm little now. When I was younger, I was the runt of the litter. And I was always competing against boys twice as tall as me, it seemed. And so basketball was important. But what I remember about my childhood more than anything else is all the trips that we made to meet with the Lord's people. We lived in a little community in southern Indiana named Floyd's Knobs. You've probably never heard of it. But Floyd's Knobs is right outside of Louisville, near New Albany, Indiana, in Jeffersonville, Indiana. So when you cross the Ohio River coming into Indiana, you're right by where I grew up. And so to get from Floyd's Knobs down to New Albany, where the Silver Street Church was, we had to wind down the knobs. And I remember being in the car going like this, almost every time going to meet with the saints. And I remember my little sister just annoying me to death all the way there. That's what I remember. And you know how that happens in a car, young people, when you're with other kids. And yet I also remember growing up among some awesome people. One of my childhood heroes was a man by the name of Dave Merry, who would ultimately serve as one of the elders for the Silver Street Church and then the Charlestown, it's now the Charlestown Road Church in New Albany. I just thought he was the greatest guy, one of the nicest guys. His son and I are good friends to this day, and he lives in Memphis. But Dave Merry was just, I just thought he was the essence of what a Christian should be. And I looked up to him and said, one day I want to be a Christian like Dave Merry. And just recently, they went on to his reward. And it was people like that that were a big influence in my life. The Bible class teachers that I had, I remember all the gospel preachers that came through, and my mom and dad would have them over for dinner on Sunday afternoon, it seems a lot, when they came over, and my mom would make a roast, and I would take that cornbread and everything else that mom made, the green beans, sometimes macaroni and cheese and the roast and the carrots and potatoes, and I'd pile it all on top of the cornbread, and then I'd put gravy over all over it to eat it like one big stew. And she said, don't do that when we have the preacher over. But I liked it that way. I mean, you ought to try it sometime. Gravy on macaroni and cheese. It worked for me. Where was I going with that story? Okay. The young people. Introduce them. If it's not your children, or if you've already done that, your children are grown, introduce your grandchildren. Bring them to Jesus. Have you ever thought, those of you who are older, you've already raised your kids, this may not be a feel-good moment in the sermon. Is there anything you would have done differently? Would you raise your hand if I ask you to? I'm not. I thought about it. If you were raising your kids again, what would you do differently? I admit to you and confess to you, there's some things I would do differently. I wish I had the opportunity again. It's really a little frustrating when you can bring the wisdom to the table that you have at 57 years old that you didn't have when you were 30 or 35 years old. And so I wonder why God entrusts this work of raising kids to people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, when you probably have a little bit more of a solid idea of what should be done when you're in your 50s. But I know why. Because at my age, you're just way too tired to do it. You've got to have energy to raise kids. And you have that when you're younger. And so maybe our role is, when we get a little bit older, to tell the younger ones, this is what I would have done. And I want to tell you three things. Number one, and I think this is so very important. We need to train our children to have spiritual eyes. Paul talks about that in the New Testament, the eyes of our heart being enlightened. We need to train our children to look to spiritual things, not merely the things that are seen. 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Our kids need to see things from a spiritual perspective and not just on the basis of what they see in this physical world. The real realities of life are in the spiritual realm. That's where things last and endure. This is all temporary. Train your children to have spiritual eyes. Number two, we need to train our children to have a God priority in their lives. My mom and dad emphasized that to me, and I appreciate that. I wouldn't say my parents were Bible scholars by any sense of that word. But they trained us to prioritize God in our lives. And that's been beneficial and valuable to me. I don't believe I would be doing this work had they not emphasized that to me. And number three, train your kids to serve other people. We live in a self-saturated culture. If you would have asked me 15 years ago what the word narcissist means, I could not have even told you what that means or what that is. Now I will tell you that we absolutely need to know what a narcissist is, and they're everywhere. Now that's hyperbole, but there are a lot of them out there. And here's something you need to know. Sometimes they hang out among the Lord's people. I'm not just talking about someone who is very selfish. We have a lot of those people in our world. I'm talking about individuals who are so damaged in their view of themselves and their view of the world that everything that goes on with them is about them. And if you're concerned about whether or not you are a narcissist, that's a good step in the right direction that you may not be one. If you want to try to avoid that. So if there is a narcissist in this audience, I'm probably being tuned out right now. So let me tell you how you ward that off. There's a lot of things that contribute to the narcissist in our world. Social media has been a narcissist springboard. We have a proliferation of narcissists because of social media. Now, I'm not anti-social media. I think it has its place. I'm on various platforms of social media. I think some good can be done in social media. I love being able to keep up with the members and all the crazy antics that go on in their lives through Facebook and Instagram. But these things can fuel the me focus that will destroy us, that is anti-Christian, if we're not careful. Let's not make everything in the world all about me. You know, we used to talk about the me generation. I want to tell you, that generation has tire tracks on its back when it comes to me and serving me. There are far too many me-focused people in our world. And if you want to defeat that, you need to start teaching your kids to think about and serve others. You should be doing something every day, or nearly every day, that has nothing to do with you, but has something to do with benefiting and helping another. Well, I could go on all day just about that. But I want to bring one more observation to your attention tonight, and it's from our text in Mark. And that is that we must come to the kingdom like a child. You must come like a child, or you cannot come at all. I want to take you to Matthew 18 and make an observation, because this is a text that you probably have already thought about in this regard. I want to read 7 verses there, and I want to make an important observation about our text in Mark 10. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus saying, "Who then is greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" Okay, let's talk about what's truly great. And he called a child to himself. And I'll just say, the apostles needed this as much as the Pharisees did. They were arguing about who's going to be great in the kingdom up to Jesus' last hours on the earth. Who's going to be number one in the pecking order in Jesus' new administration? And I'm sure Peter thought it was going to be him. Always fight. James and John probably put mom up to it. "I want one of my sons to sit on your right and another on your left." And the rest of them got a little hot under the collar. They got indignant over that. Well, you don't really know what it means to be on the right and the left in this kingdom. You're going to have to drink a cup. And whoever is greatest in this kingdom is servant of all. And I could stop right there, and I'm going to say something about that in a minute. Hold that thought. Called a child to himself. So truly I say unto you, unless you are converted and become like children, you shall not enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever then humbles himself as this child, he is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever receives one such child in my name, on the basis of who I am, in my name, receives me. But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, you can contribute to someone else's spiritual demise by your behavior. It is better for him. Now before you do that, I want you, it would have been better for you to have a heavy millstone be hung around his neck. And I don't know if you've ever done this. If you ever tie a heavy millstone, most of us don't know what that is. Just think of a big heavy rock. If you don't know what a heavy millstone is, you tie that around somebody and drop them in the sea. That's an anchor, right? You're going straight to the bottom. It would be better to have a heavy millstone hung around his neck, that he be drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe to the world because of its stumbling block. For it is inevitable that stumbling blocks come. But woe to that man through whom the stumbling block comes. We need to be careful what we're saying. What we're conveying about Christianity. The influence we have upon others by what we teach and how we teach it. I don't want to be the reason that anyone fails to enter glory. I need to be a conduit to you and to everyone who hears me, understanding what it takes to please God and go to heaven. Woe to that man through whom the stumbling block comes. And so we often go to this text in Matthew chapter 18 and say, okay, when he's talking about a child and becoming like a child, he's talking about humility. Because he says, unless you humble yourself like a child. But that's true. But in Mark 10, he doesn't mention humility. That's a different occasion. He says that here in Matthew 18 after he calls the child in and says, humble yourself like a child. But in Mark 10, that's a totally different context. He doesn't mention humility. He simply says, as such is the kingdom of heaven. You've got to come like a child or you do not come at all. It's not just a matter of humility. It is everything we understand and see in a child. What is that? What is it about children that look like Jesus' teaching in the kingdom, and it's more than just humility. I'll tell you what we know about children. One of the reasons why Jesus says, unless you come like a child, you shall not come at all. You must come innocently to the King. You must find your innocence in Him because we come guilty with stains on our hands. One thing I love about kids is how innocent they are. They're not about facade and hypocrisy. It's what you see is what you get. I know sometimes they're a little ornery, a little difficult to manage, but there's an innocence about a child that we need to have. I was holding a meeting in Plainfield, Indiana, and I was staying at the home of Dan and Christy Starr, and Dan's the evangelist there, and they have two young girls, the youngest of whom is Clara. And I was staying upstairs in the loft over the garage. And so I got up there one night after the meeting and dropped off my Bible and my jacket and gotten comfortable clothes. And I was going to come down and visit the family. And so I had a glass of water in one hand and my iPad in the other. And I was coming down the stairs. Well, the stairs were really shallow, and I had not taken that into consideration. They weren't large steps as you went down, so probably need to pay a little bit more attention than I was paying. And plus, Clara was at the bottom of the stairs. And so I got about halfway down, and I was coming down quickly, because that's what I do when I go down the stairs. I don't take my time, and I miss a step. And so when I missed a step, I had to try to catch myself, and it was either the glass of water or the iPad, and I made the wise choice. I held on to the iPad because it was far more valuable. And so I slid down on my bottom, all the way to the bottom of the stairs, and there stood Clara laughing her head off at me. I could have been injured. But this is the innocence of a child. She thought this was hilarious. And her greatest concern was, you spilt the water. And I said, well, it's just water. And then she looked at me and she said, you could use a sippy cup. I said, okay, here I am reverting back to childhood and sippy cup now. That's children. Children are innocent. We need that kind of innocence about us. Let us drop the facades. Let's be real with each other. God knows who you are at your core. And yes, not only are children innocent, they are humble. And I think this is particularly important when you see the disciples clamoring for position, when you see the attitudes of the Pharisees. And I think sometimes when we study the Pharisees, we think, yeah, those people had some real spiritual problems. We don't see any connection to them with us at all. Do you think we could degenerate into their mindset? Oh, absolutely. We can. When Christianity becomes all about understanding all the rules and making sure we have all the rules right, and certainly the rules matter. And as Jesus would say to them, you should not have left these things undone. But these things matter too. Justice, mercy, and faithfulness. And these you have left undone. Sometimes I think we get so focused on the rules and trying to understand all the principles that sometimes we forget about the simple important things like walking with God on a daily basis. My submission completely to the King will always be my greatest challenge. Children are trusting. You know this. Your kids put a lot of trust in you until you violate that trust. And certainly there are some homes where that happens, where the kids cannot trust the parents. But if you are a trustworthy parent, your kids put their trust in you. They count on you to provide for them, to lead them, to tell them how to do things and when to do things. And they look up to you for that kind of guidance. And that's the way we need to be with our king. He's our leader. He's the one who directs us. He's the one in whom we can place our trust and confidence. And kids are sponges. They are teachable. They are willing to listen and learn. And we've got to make sure that we haven't gotten to a place in our walk with God that we've got everything figured out. Every T is crossed and every I is dotted and there's nothing left to learn. I'm still learning stuff. I've learned some things this year about Matthew 24 that I hadn't seen before. I learned something just recently about Romans 8 that I hadn't seen before. I had missed how that really fits in the rest of the context of Romans, and I'm pretty sure I'd been wrong about some things there. And I'm sure there's going to be other things that I discover as I continue to study and the lights start to go on a little bit more. Like I told you this morning about 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 15, I just hadn't noticed that hope is really at the centerpiece of that verse. Have we got it all figured out, or are we still willing to learn? I'll tell you this about kids too. Kids are resilient. They have a short memory. They can bounce back quickly. They'll come to you and they are on death's doorstep. They have injured themselves. They are bleeding and they come to mom. At least they know probably they're going to get more compassion out of mom than dad. And they come to mom and if we don't do something about this, I'm going to die. And you know, mom kisses it and puts a little band-aid on it, and 5 minutes later, it's like it never happened. They went from death's door to being perfectly fine and out laughing and playing and carrying on like they were before. Kids are very resilient. Sometimes adults, we're not as resilient. Kids don't stay discouraged for very long, and yet we can. I like that passage that we read in 1 John 4, perfect love casts out fear. What do you think about that? Again, I say, rejoice. Rejoice in the Lord always. I'll tell you one more thing I see in children that we need to have demonstrated in our lives. Kids have zeal. Sometimes too much zeal. I wish I had half the energy of children, don't you? But they have a lot of zeal. They bring a lot of zest to the table. And that's the way we have to come to the kingdom. We need to be excited and invigorated about our involvement in these things. So when I come to the conclusion of these thoughts about what children are and how we can emulate them, we need to be smack dab in the middle of all that matters. We need to be excited about our involvement in the greatest things that are. And we need to cling tenaciously to goodness, to a marvelous, unspeakable, and exceeding hope. Bring those childlike qualities to the table, and you can be a part of this kingdom. Is there someone in our audience who needs to respond, to embrace all the provisions of this wonderful gospel? Come now while we stand and sing.